हरिः
ॐ सहनावतु सहनोभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीमद्वैत गदाधर शिव सति गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 26. 81. What is the cause of this disturbance? Now I am in great trouble. Night has fallen before I could finish today's chanting. That night had come before he could finish his chanting was an upadravya, or cause of pain, as well as a vigna, an obstruction to fulfilling his vow to chant a prescribed number of mantras daily. 82. Have I fallen asleep? Or become haunted by a ghost. Oh, I am so wicked that even when I have reason to be sad, I feel happiness in my heart. Right? Because he's been in ecstasy, being absorbed in meditation on the name. And then he's wondering why it is that I haven't finished my vows, I haven't done this, but I'm happy. So I must be bad. Right? So he doesn't really, because he doesn't understand the nature of the devotional service. Because remember, he started off as a tantric, and even not a very good one. You know, he was just an average, really, you know, run-of-the-mill tantric. You know, and now he's you know, experiencing all these things because he's not educated. He wouldn't know what these things are, like that. But that's the whole point, is that the name is such that they happen anyway, whether you understand them or not. That's the nice part. I say, despite our lack, the name still works. Right. Trying to answer his own question about the cause of the problem, the Brahmana guessed that he might have fallen asleep. But since he didn't feel tired, he guessed again that something else might have happened, like having been attacked by a ghost. 83. One day, however, while lamenting in this way, as he began to feel drowsy from fasting, he saw Lord Madhava, who consoled him and gave him this instruction. Once again, the Brahman had fallen into a trance of ecstasy, and upon waking had become upset with himself. This time he felt so discouraged that he finished the day without eating, which made him feel sleepy. Lord Madhava, the deity of Dashrameda Tirtha, then appeared to him in his sleep-like state and said something like this. Why are you lamenting for no good reason? And why are you causing distress to me, your worshipable deity? I assure you that all your ambitions will soon be fulfilled. So 84. Dear Brahmana, please remember the words of Vishveshwara, the husband of Uma. Go by the path along the shore of the Jamuna to Sri Vrindavan.
Yes.
Why was he lamenting?
Because he wasn't finishing his vow.
On the mantra?
Yes, because he was supposed to chant a certain number, because Uma had given him a certain amount of you know, japa to do and a certain way to do it, and he wasn't getting it done because in chanting he'd go into ecstasy meditating upon the deity. And then, you know, time would pass and he wouldn't know, and then when he'd come out of the trance he'd see he hasn't finished his chanting and the day is gone. Right? So because he doesn't know, he doesn't know what's happening. While reminding the Brahmana of Sri Vishveshwara's instructions, Lord Gopal repeated it from his own mouth and in his own words, thus making it his direct order also. Apart from this, Vishveshwara, Lord Shiva, is the husband of the goddess Kamakya, the spiritual authority who gave the Brahmana his mantra. So the brahmana should not neglect the instruction. Right? So, in other words, his namaguru, her husband, has told him this, and now Krishna himself is telling. So point is don't neglect this because you've heard this from authority. Right? Shiva's told you to go, who's the husband of your namaguru. Right? 85. By my mercy, there you obtain extraordinary pleasure. Go and don't delay anywhere on the road for any reason. The pleasure to be had in Sri Vrindavan is incomparable, superior to all four kinds of success in worldly endeavor: religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. The brahmana should be undistracted while on the road to Vrindavan. He shouldn't stray from devotional service into the side roads of jnana and karma. Lord Madhava here advises the brahmana that good fortune will arise by his mercy alone, the Lord's mercy, not that of anyone else. But that mercy of Lord Madhava will appear especially in certain places, at certain times, and in certain company. Right? So in going, he shouldn't get distracted. Like here, he's supposed to be going, and then he gets stopped and that. So then this problem is coming up. So Lord Madhava is telling him, don't get distracted. You know, so it means, one, is just go straight to Vrindavan, but two means it, don't get distracted by the paths of karma and jnana. Because in stopping at these places and taking this association so far, that's all he's run into. Right? So then it also has that element to it. Right? 86. Thus the brahmana arose early in the morning and happily set out on his journey. Gradually he became blessed. He came to blessed. Oh. Yeah, that's funny. Same spelling.
Yeah.
Two different. Yeah, that's interesting. He came to blessed Madhupuri and bathed at Vishranta Tirtha. Obeying the Lord's order, the Brahmin at once started for Vrindavan. And when he entered the holy dham, he came first to Mathura city. Following the standard custom of pilgrims, he first visited the bathing place on the Jamuna, known as Vishranta Tirtha, Vishramghat. It's Vishranta Tirtha, we know it as Vishramghat because Lord Chaitanya came and he rested there. But I think it's also known by that name because whoever the ghat's named after, I think they also rested there. So it has both of these names. 87. He went on to Vrindavan and there felt enlivened at every moment. For while chanting his mantra, he saw in meditation most of the companions and surroundings from Krishna's pastimes. He saw Krishna's supremely beautiful cows, cowherds, kadamba trees, and so on, which, although famous, are beyond the power of unqualified people to describe. 88. He wandered here and there in that cow-adored land without meeting any people. But at one place on the eastern side of Keshi Tirtha, he heard someone crying. At the holy place where Krishna had once killed the horse demon, Keshi, the brahmana met the first human being he was to encounter in Vrindavan. The sacred place, Keshi Tirtha, is described in Mathura Mahatmya of the Varaha Purana, 152:30-31. 100 times more sacred than the Ganga, O Goddess Earth, is the Jamuna in my own abode, Mathura. No one need doubt this. More sacred than Mathura by 100 times is the place on Jamuna where Keshi demon fell, and 100 times more sacred than Keshi Tirtha is the spot nearby where Krishna rested after the demon was killed. 89. Heading in the direction of that sound, he heard it mingled with constant Nama Samkirtan performed in pure love. And so he looked for the person chanting. From a distance, he recognized only the sound of crying. But as he approached, he heard the names of the Supreme Lord being sweetly chanted with great affection, with syllables drawn out long and melodious, by someone whose heart seemed completely softened by love of God. He became intent upon finding the person chanting. 90. He entered a dense dark forest where he couldn't see anymore, But he discerned the place from which the sound came, and he eagerly went there to the bank of the Jamuna. So thick was the forest that the leaves of the trees left no space for the light of the sun to enter. The Brahmana saw no one but could still hear the sound of Nam Kirtan, which drew him further on. He meets Gopa Kumar in Vrindavan, 90-108. 91. There in a grove of kadamba trees, he found a handsome young man whose body was very tender, with a dress and accoutrements of a cowherd. The person the Brahmana had discovered was dressed like a cowherd boy, with a flute, buffalo horn, and herding stick, and with a peacock feather on his head. Every part of his body appeared auspicious. So he's just dressed like Krishna and them were dressed in Vrindavan. Just as a side point, you notice here is in Vrindavan, where Krishna always wears a peacock feather, but others at times also wear. So this whole thing about only this one or not this one, like that, that's not important. Right. 92. Mistaking this person for his worshipable deity, the Brahmana joyfully called out, "O Gopal," and fell to the ground like a rod to offer respects. Because the cowherd sitting before the Brahmana was dressed and ornamented just like modern Gopal, the Brahmana thought that this was the deity in person. The Brahmana wanted to offer a fitting salutation, so he at once fell flat on the ground and with spontaneous enthusiasm sweetly called out, "O Gopal." The offering of these three syllables, Go, Pa, and La, was his way of properly honoring the Lord. 93-94. This young cowherd was the crest jewel of those who know everything. As the Brahmana regained external consciousness, the cowherd gazed at him as a Mathura Brahmana. The cowherd recognized him as a Mathura Brahmana, living in the district of the goddess Kamika and worshipping Sriman Madan Gopal. The cowherd then came out of the grove, raised the Brahmana, bowed down to him, embraced him, and made him sit down. The cowherd knew, without being told, that his guest was a Brahmana who had traveled to Vrindavan from a long distance. For specifically knew that his visitor was the child of a Brahmin family in Mathura, who had moved to the Kamarupa district in Assam to worship the presiding goddess Kamika. Furthermore, the young coward knew that this Brahmana was now worshipping the lotus feet of Sriman Madan Gopal and had come for some special purpose of the Lord's. Actually, Sri Radha Devi had ordered the cowherd to go to the grove that morning. So he bowed to his guest, raised him from the ground, embraced him, and invited him to sit down. 95. To further gain the Brahmana's confidence, the cowherd pleased him with hospitality, and then smiled and revealed something about the Brahmana's life. I don't know.
It's a quiet life. Quiet life.
Yes, quiet life, yes. The young cowherd, Gopa Kumar, greeted his Brahmana guest in a manner befitting the time and place, and then briefly recounted what had happened in the Brahmin's life, beginning with his worship of the goddess Kamakya, and leading up to his coming to this place on the shore of the Jamuna. The cowherd expertly revealed things hidden in the Brahmana's heart that no one else could have known. Why did he do this? He wanted to win the Brahmana's trust so that the Brahmana would believe what he was about to be told. Otherwise, the Brahmana might be skeptical about Gopa Kumar's fantastic story. So this element of revealing things, then so you get confidence, but that's so that the instruction and that will be given is of value. It's not meant for gaining material benefit from it. Like previously, Ayurvedic doctors, you'd come sit down, they wouldn't ask you what's wrong. No, that's just not done. They would take your pulse, tell you what's wrong. And then when that would happen, you'd have confidence. So because they're going to tell you some diet or medicine you should take that isn't necessarily, your greatest idea of, ecstasy here. So you have to have already had faith that he understood what was wrong. Right? Because otherwise, if you have to tell him everything and then he tells you, okay, take this medicine, then you might, also think, well, I will take or not. But if he's told you, does that make sense? You know, the same way is also, you know, it's a tradition amongst the Brigus and like this, they're astrologers, that when you come to visit them, when you come and sit down, they should tell you what your question is. Right? Then you say, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about. And so there's a science to it. But here it's because the deity's revealed that he's very advanced, so these things are happening. But in these others, because there's a science for them, and so because of this, they can tell. So when they... Does this make sense? So that's the whole idea, is by using this technique, then he will have that faith, because what he'll tell them then is something that he should take seriously and follow. Okay. 96. The Brahmana now understood that this was a young cowherd boy and accepted him as if the boy were a dear friend. Happily trusting him, the Brahmana then recounted his own entire life story. When the Brahmana understood that this was not his worship of the Lord, but a cowherd with all good qualities, the Brahmana relaxed. 97. Then, with great humility, considering this young child of the cowherds the best of wise men and a great saint, the Brahmana submissively added an inquiry. 98. The Brahmana said, "From various sources I have heard of various goals and various methods to achieve them. But I still cannot definitely decide what goal I should strive for and what I should do to reach it." Right? So being a Brahmana, he's just used to that the principle that you do something that you're supposed to do. Right? So he was worshipping Kamakya because that's who his parents were worshipping. And so then, having gotten instruction from her to chant a particular mantra, right, and having chanted this mantra, you know, he's fixed that he should do this. But at the same time, he met the Karmakandis, and, you know, they gave some direction, and amongst them, they each had a direction what he should do. You know, but it wasn't giving real satisfaction. He goes to Varanasi, the sannyasis there give all kinds of direction. Like that, then Lord Shiva says, you know, go to Vrindavan because it's not worth sticking around there. Then he meets others, and, you know, so all these different, he meets the devotees, all these things are happening, so he's a little confused because he's just, by nature, brahminical, he's just dutiful, right? And is used to, as a Brahmin, used to sadhana and things like that. So he's doing that. But he doesn't exactly know what he's doing or why he's doing it because so far no one's actually explained it. Like that. On the bank of the Ganga at Kashi and elsewhere, the Brahmin had heard various kinds of spiritual advice. He had heard in one place that heaven was the ultimate goal of life, and in another that liberation from the cycle of birth and death is the goal. And as for means of success, he had heard claims that karma was the means, jnana or other methods. No wonder he was confused. Right? Because whatever your goal, you can use various systems to get there. Now, generally for a standard goal, there's a standard system. But you can use other systems. So now he's heard different goals and different systems. So now he's confused. 99. Whatever the goddess ordered me, I regularly do. But I have no idea about the results of those duties, or even what kind of acts they are. Because he's only known karma and jnana. So he doesn't actually know about devotional. So he's been given devotional service, but he doesn't know what it is. The Brahmana did not know what the goal of his endeavor was and how he might achieve it. Why was he continuing to chant this mantra? He was doing so because he had respect for the order of the goddess Kamakya. The little she had asked him to do, namely chant this mantra, was not much compared to the complex duties of householders and sannyasis that he had learned about from others. He continued chanting out of reverence for the goddess, not because he understood the essence of what he was doing. He was even unaware whether this chanting belonged to the category of ritual duties, cultivation of knowledge, or devotional service. Therefore, he thought, since his practice was not based on definite knowledge and faith, it had no real value for spiritual advancement. Because generally the concept is, I'm doing something, that's why I'm developing. Because in karma and jnana, that's how it works. So we also have to be careful that within devotional service, we don't think, because I'm doing this, that's why I'm advancing. It's actually because Krishna's pleased we're advancing. And so there has to be something to prove sincerity. Right? So that's that the standard aspects of devotional service, that's what's recommended. Following that, Krishna's pleased, but it's not because I'm doing this, this itself gives that result. Does that make sense? So that's why he's even wondering, if I should be doing this, because I don't know what it is, where it's going, so how much benefit would I actually get? But we see he's getting so much benefit. He's already lost his taste for the tantric, he's lost the taste for the karma, he's lost the taste for the gyan, right? He's gotten the mercy of Kamakya Devi, of her husband, and then Mother Gopal himself, and now Radharani has sent this person. So all this is coming despite his not knowing really what's going on. So that's the power of the holy name. Is that so much benefit is gained even if you don't know what's going on. Yeah? So how much is gained if you know what's going on? Yes?
Can we say that by our action we prove Krishna our sincerity? It's not that we are the doer, but if we don't
yes,
do anything.
Of course. But it's not that because of that action, that's why Krishna has to give his mercy.
He doesn't have to.
No, but that's what the Karmakandis will say. Right? God is not, in other words, they take it that I'm independent, I can do what I want, I can do pious or impious or this or that. But God's not. It's I did the good work, I get the results. What he doesn't understand is you go into a store where you have an owner. You come with your money, you want to buy it, but if he doesn't like you, he can tell you to leave. At his point, no, I can't, I have the money, he has to give me the goods. But technically, Krishna doesn't. He doesn't have to give. But he's the one who gave the pass, so if you follow it, then you're doing what he says. So that's nice. So one should have confidence that by following the devotional path, you will get the benefit. Right? But if that benefit is because Krishna is pleased by these activities. So that's why these activities are recommended. So the acharyas recommend those activities that please Krishna. Does that make sense? So yes, because we make that sincere effort, that Krishna gives his mercy. But it's not mechanical. So it's not that I'm doing the activity, that's why I'm doing the activity with the right attitude. So even if the technique is not so good, if the attitude's right, it still works. And as we see, if you follow the technique because it's coming in line of authority, with time you become purified, the attitude comes. So in any case, it works out. That's what's so good about the system. Yeah?
We say that the holy name can produce all that Brahmana was experiencing.
Yes.
He wasn't chanting.
That's the holy name.
Also,
means Krishna's names are the holy names. So it's because we're chanting Maha Mantra, we just say the holy names. But the principle is the same. If you talk about chanting the holy names, any Vaishnava Sampradaya will agree with you, even though the names they may be chanting may be different. But the point is if you chant the Lord's names, if that sincerity to please the Lord, then that's going to get that benefit. Right? And we see here, even he's not doing it to please the Lord, he's just doing it because he's supposed to be doing it, it still works. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the advantage. If someone's dutiful, then if they're given the instructions in devotional service and they do them, even if they don't understand them, they'll be benefited. Does that make sense? So that's why that position's better than someone who is always trying to figure out how to get out of doing what you're supposed to be doing. Like the modern society. It's like, why do I have to do this? Yes?
Oh, Maharaj, but there's still something in him that wants to know why.
Yes.
So then, is that the need for a spiritual...
Yes. I think that's what we're leading into.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the direction that we'll go, because he'll get the spiritual instruction. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
100. I therefore think my life worthless, and I simply want to die. I continue to live only by the mercy of Lord Madhava and Lord Shiva and his wife. It was at Prayag that the Brahmin had reached his first point of crisis in his spiritual life. There also, however, he had received the grace of Lord Vishnu in the form of Sri Madhava, and of Lord Vishveshwar and his wife Kamakya Devi, who had all appeared in dreams to give him guidance. Yes, it's kind of like Kamakya Devi's is Nam Guru, Shiva's is Vartma Darshak Guru, right? Krishna and Madan Gopal's is Siksha Guru.
And Bob Kumar is Diksha Guru.
Yeah, so he's doing okay. He's good. Yeah, he's good. Hundred and one. Only by their mercy have I met you here today, a compassionate, all-knowing person. You are just like my worshipable deity, and I am very happy and satisfied to meet you. Now please deliver this wretched soul. At Prayag, the Brahmana received the mercy of Sri Madhava, Vishveshwara, and Kamakya Devi. But only in Vrindavan could he understand the inestimable. Huh? Is that inestimable?
Yeah, unable to be estimated.
Yeah, but it would be inestimable or something. Yeah, it's funny how sometimes they shorten things to be more sophisticated, and other times they leave it, you can't pronounce it. Okay? Inestimable. Okay. Value of that mercy. Now he is confident that Gopa Kumar is as good as Lord Madan Gopal. In other words, Gopa Kumar's transcendental instruction can easily lift him out of the ocean of his doubts and out of the vast ocean of material existence. 102. Sri Parikit said, respectfully, having heard the Brahmana's words, the young cowherd thought, this person has done everything he needs to do. Indeed, his life is a complete success, right? But he's thinking he's completely useless, right? That's just a natural humility. Right? The word adhara is usually understood to mean respect. It can also mean affection. With respect for the Brahmana's status as a Mathura Brahmana, and with special affinity for him as a fellow worshipper of Sri Madan Gopal, Gopakumar heard him out. Text 102 to 108 describe Gopakumar's thoughtful concern for the Brahmana. 103. Oh, this is what he's thinking. All that remains for him to achieve is to see directly the lotus feet of the Lord. He needs to become attached not so much to the solitary chanting of the Lord's mantra, but to the Sankirtana of his names. When received by Pancharatrik initiation in Vaishnava Sampradaya, Vishnu mantras deliver the chanter from illusion and provide him liberation and entrance into the divine life of devotional service. But the highest standard of pure love of God is obtainable not by the Pancharatrika Vidhi, but by Bhagavat Vidhi of Nam Sankirtana. Worship of Krishna's names without material motives. The Jyotisha Pura Brahman had been chanting the 10-syllable Gopal mantra for some time with good effect. But only after he heard the Shuddha Nam from Gopakumar was he able to chant the names of Lord Gopal in the perfect consciousness of Sankirtana. Offenseless Sankirtana with concentrating attention naturally develops into spontaneous attraction to Krishna and his loving service. 104 to 105. Certainly no means of perfection is superior to the worship of Sriman Madan Gopal's lotus feet. That worship yields results far beyond what one could expect. It should be performed mainly through Nama Samkirtana, along with reverence and affection for the many places of Sri Gopal's pastimes, places one should regularly visit. How then had the Brahmana already made so much spiritual advancement? He had done so by worshipping Sri Krishna, although irregularly. He had been worshipping without the complete faith and understanding that I guess, would come only from the special mercy of the Krishna's pure devotees. But any contact with Krishna, the supreme goal of all existence, assures absolute perfection. And so also does any contact with his names, for hearing and chanting his names is the supreme method for attaining Krishna prema. Even offensive chanting of Krishna's names, if continued long enough, will free one from disqualifications and even namapas. Offenseless chanting without real attachment will quickly lead to liberation and the rise of transcendental attachment and taste. So But just by practicing it, even though one doesn't fully understand that, just that there's any connection to Krishna in anything, one will get purified and uplifted. Right? So that's why in one's life, whatever one has, what's important, connect that to Krishna. So even if it's not necessarily something very important, but it's important to you, you've connected to Krishna, it will act as a means of upliftment. Right? Then, as we chant, you know, we continue this, then we come to the position where we start to become freed from these attachments. And then it starts to develop very dynamically. Right? Then we start to develop that attachment to Krishna. Thus, for spiritual upliftment, there's no better practice than worship at the divine lotus feet of Lord Madan Gopal. In this verse, the Lord's feet are described as Sriman, indicating that they fully possess all types of wealth and splendor. They have the potency to satisfy all the heartfelt desires of a devotee and to light him in ways unanticipated by his consciousness and even subconscious desires. The principal activity of this worship is Sankirtana, chanting out loud in melodious song the Lord's names like Krishna, Govinda, and Gopal. Sri Parikit further suggests that the effects of Hari Nam Sankirtan are enhanced by visiting the sacred places in Brajabhumi, where Krishna enjoyed pastimes with his gopas and gopis. As much as other obligations of devotional service allow, Vaishnavas should wander about these places and see them with their own eyes. If they do this with love and respect, their Nama Bhajan will soon bear fruit. So Krishna and anything connected to Krishna, that's what's important. Right? But most important are the devotees, because they're the ones that actually have that taste and attachment to Krishna and his name, form, qualities, pastimes, associates, everything. Right? So then, you know, all this together then makes things go very well. Because as we mentioned, as Bhagavatam mentions, if you visit the holy places of pilgrimage but don't take advantage of devotees' instructions, then, you know, you're like a cow or an ass. They're also going around there and taking bath and doing things. So that's the 106. And there is no better goal than this very worship, in which pure love of God appears, mocking the four lesser aims of life and bringing the Lord's lotus feet under one's control. Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation appear insignificant in comparison to Krishna prema. Only prema bhakti can bring the personality of Godhead under control. Sri Krishna Karshani Chasa, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1117. 107. To bring him to this realization, first I must tell him my own history in full. That will clear away all his doubts. The Brahmana needs to be informed that Krishna is the goal of his endeavors, and that Nama Sankirtan is the means to achieve Krishna. But if Gopa Kumara were to say this from the start, the Brahmana, his mind ruled by doubts and misconceptions, might not grasp the full import of the advice. Therefore, to win the Brahmana's trust, Gopa Kumara first needs to describe his own experiences, beginning from when he also received the same Gopal mantra, and continuing up to the present moment. That will drive away the Brahmana's doubts and wrong ideas. It will also allow the Brahmana to drink the nectar of Sri Bhagavat Katha, which will render his heart pure enough to assimilate the transcendental knowledge he requires. In fact, that knowledge should then manifest itself automatically, even without needing to be explicitly stated. And so that knowledge is there so you understand what you're dealing with, but as one becomes advanced, and Krishna, then he reveals so many things. But the point is because that process is unlimited, Krishna is unlimited, so it's not that you don't need to hear anything more. Because by hearing, then you're always absorbed in Krishna, which is what people want to be. So by associating with the devotees, then they want to hear about Krishna. But at the same time, from hearing that, then on their own, when they're hearing and chanting and remembering, then so much more will be revealed. Does this make sense? Right? So the two nourish each other. That's the nice thing about devotional service. The whole process, each aspect nourishes each other aspect. 108, describing one's own glories is disapproved by spiritual authorities, but nothing else I could say will bring about his good fortune. Right? Because he's thinking, why should I, you know, you shouldn't tell this, but if I don't do this, he won't understand. As the saying goes, Sva prashamsha duro mrityu, self-praise is as good as death. All the same, Gopakumar understands that nothing but his own story will dispel the Brahmana's doubts and give him tattva-jnana. Because Gopakumar used his mystic power to describe the Brahmana's past, the Brahmana is already inclined to believe him. So Gopakumar should not hesitate to tell his own story, thereby make the Brahmana fortunate, since his own story is very similar to that of the Brahmana, and will drive away all his doubts. Because that's the whole point, is that element of swajati. So similar nature or similar experiences, then their experience then will be valuable for you. Right? So it's not that there's a, how do you say, that one particular thing is the only way it can be done. Right? But it's for with those who have a similar nature, that their advancement in Krishna consciousness, you can relate to that and apply it in your life. Right? So that's why the system has the broadness that it does. Because that may come by association with one person or with many persons. The point is that that kind of confidence is gained through similar experience. Does that make sense? So sometimes you see neophytes thinking, my guru, he's the only guru, and everybody else is, you know, not so important. You know, I heard once say, okay, so you didn't take initiation from my guru, but you have the great fortune that he's in town now, you can go and hear from him, you know, so basically you can kind of make up for your misfortune. Like that. And they sincerely meant that. And I was impressed. They weren't talking to me, they were talking to everybody else. So that's the neophyte mentality. No, but that's what's perfect for them. They've gotten that faith and everything. But then someone else hearing the same thing may not be, it's about Krishna, so of course one will be purified and inspired, but it may not give that real drive that it will to somebody. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. Yes? Yeah. Sri Radha's order will then quickly carried out, and what would ordinarily have been a breach of etiquette will be perfectly acceptable behavior. Because it ends in, it actually generates Krishna consciousness, so it's fine. If it doesn't, then what's the point? Gopakumar begins to narrate his own history, 109 to 112. 109. Thus the saintly son of the cowherds made up his mind. He asked the Brahmana for his attention and began to speak about his own life, just as a sage versed in the Puranas would speak an epic. Gopakumar spoke with great authority, although he was just a young herdsman. Anyone listening to him would think he was an ancient speaker of the Puranas, like Romaharshana Sutta, or his son Ugra Shrava, or a seer of Vedic mantras like the Rishi Vamanadeva. His narration was as authoritative as the Puranas and fully in accord with all Shastras. The sage Devalas defined the characteristics of a rishi. Quote, a rishi is one whose semen flows upwards, who is fierce in observing austere vows, who eats moderately, controls his senses, is able to curse and bless, and adheres firmly to the truth. Okay, well, at least the ability to curse, we got one out of, you know, how you say, how many were here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So 1 out of 7 is a start, right? No. 110. Sri Gopakumar said, right, so that means he has all these characteristics. So that makes him an authority. 110. Sri Gopakumar said, there are many relevant historical accounts, but I am going to tell you my own story, including recollections of what occurred at times when I was bewildered by ecstasy and other distractions. And so he won't just tell just the facts, but he'll also tell what he felt, his you know, doubts and distractions and everything. There are many ancient historical accounts about which certain people did and said to one another that may be useful in explaining how to determine the best goal of life. and the means to achieve it. These accounts are called itihas. Quote, a text that consists of narration of past events and includes instructions about religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation is called an itihas. So it's not that it's just a history, but it has to include directions on these things. So that's the importance. So that's the difficulty in modern history. It doesn't really worry about these things, right? You know, unless of course you're hearing about the Romans, you know, how they would sit around and eat and then you know, vomit and then eat again or something like that. So then you get at least the sense gratification part of it, right? So like that.
This,
yeah.
This story is Oedipus. So it happened, or it's a novel about God Kumar.
Does it matter? I would expect that it's itihas, because Sanatana Goswami, I mean, is revealing what Parikshit Maharaj then revealed to his mother. So I don't think it's as such necessarily. Does that make sense? Yeah, but the point is, it may use that format, just like you're telling this, you know, about economic developments, you know, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, then that would be an itihas, you know, focus on one person. If it focuses on a wide range of discussions, then that's called a Purana. Right? So the itihases, then there may be so many, like Prabhupada Lilamrita, that's an itihas. Does that make sense? So it'll be like that. Is that okay? You know, it's just the narrative, the style you'll tell, the narrative style, that's another thing. Gopakumar's plan, however, is to tell his own history instead. Of all forms of evidence for establishing the truth, experience from one's own life is the strongest. Because in learning, you're going to learn a quarter of what you know from the teacher, right? A quarter from study, a quarter from your own life experience, and a quarter from others' life experience. Like that. So that's what he's saying here, is explaining your own experience, that's going to be the strongest in having effect. Thus, when Gopakumar frankly reveals the events of his life, the Brahmana should be persuaded of the higher truth that Gopakumar has grasped. On occasion, Gopakumar was unaware of what was going on around him because the overflowing of his love for the Supreme Lord disturbed his external perception. Even so, by virtue of his advanced self-realization, he can now recollect even the details of events of which he was unconscious when they occurred. Because now this will be later. So he's saying, how would he know that if he's in ecstasy? How does he know what's going on? Because now, later, in his self-realization, he can understand that. Yeah, that seems to be one of the funs. Ringing the bell and yelling as loud as you can. Because it's authorized. Right? Notice that yelling's louder because they have full confidence. While they're over here, they're yelling, but they're not fully confident. That, right? Yeah. Many of these personal events are also too confidential to discuss freely in public, and Gopakumar may be somewhat embarrassed to mention them. He feels obliged, however, to do everything he can to help enlighten the Brahmana. As Gopakumar will tell the Brahmana in the last chapter of this book, just see, I have told you everything that happened to me, and everything done by the Lord and his devotees, even that which is extremely confidential. Read Bhagavatam Rita 2.7.4. So verse 1. I am a son of Vaishya of Govardhan, who made his living as a cowherd. As a young boy of that community, I used to tend my own cows. O best of learned brahmanas, I stayed in the company of other boys there at Govardhan, here in Vrindavan, on the banks of the Jamuna, and at various other places in the district of Mathura. Now Gopakumar begins his story, which will continue until the end of the sixth chapter. He was born in a Vaishya community, in a family of cowherds. Many scriptures, including Srimad Bhagavatam 10.24.21, describe that Vaishyas may engage in four occupations: trade, banking, farming, cow protection, krishi, vanijya, go, raksha, kushidam. As this history unfolds, we shall find that although a long time has passed since Gopakumar was an innocent boy at Govardhan, he has not aged at all. As he explained later, this was due to a blessing given him by his spiritual master. Quote, by the potency of this mantra, may you live a long time. May you always have the form of a cowherd boy. And may you develop the right mentality for tasting the mantra's fruit. Brihad Bhagavatam Rita 2.1.191. Gopakumar's tending a herd of his own cows means that his family was relatively well-to-do and independent. In the course of doing his work, he wandered over the area within the 20 yojana circumference of Mathura Mandala. Among the places he used for cowherding, his special favorites were Govardhan, the forest of Vrindavan, and the shores of the Jamuna. Sometimes he went to other locations in the Dham, like Mahavan, but according to one transcendental opinion, Brajabhumi consists of nothing but Govardhan, Vrindavan, and the Jamuna, since these three places pervade the entire Dham. In any case, there is no place outside of Brajadham where a cowherd can get real benefit from his occupation. Gopakumar addresses his new student by saying, O best of learned brahmanas, because the student hails from the brahmana community of Mathura. Gopakumar meets his spiritual master, 113 to 119. In the forest, we regularly saw a certain first-class brahmana wandering from place to place. He was very renounced, and his body appeared like that of a god. The person the boys frequently saw was in truth the best of brahmanas. His body was golden and very beautiful. 114. He was always chanting the glories of Krishna. Sometimes he sang and sometimes danced. Sometimes, absorbed in meditation, he chanted his mantra to himself. And sometimes he gave himself over to laughter. The outstanding characteristic of this brahmana was that he always vibrated Krishna's glories, either with the two-syllable name Krishna or with other names of the personality of Godhead. He would sing these names sweetly in various ways. He sometimes appeared withdrawn into his private japa and dhyana, which he dutifully performed daily, even though he was already perfect in chanting the Lord's holy names. As the tantras prescribe, even a person who has perfected the chanting of his mantra should continue to perform regular worship through japa and dhyana to show gratitude to his spiritual benefactors. Right? Because the point of Krishna being that the mantra is non-different from Krishna, then he gets that benefit even if he's come to the perfect platform, because on the transcendental platform you can always develop more and more. So, as far as sadhana goes, then that he's out of respect for his teachers, then he's following that. But as far as the chanting, then that's always valuable. Even if one has perfected his mantra and is completely pure in heart, he should still worship the Lord at the three junctures of the day by the method prescribed. Or at least at one of these three times he should do his worship. And 108 times he should chant japa of his mantra. So that means even the person who's come to the perfect platform, then he would still practice the sadhana of chanting his mantra just three times a day. Right? Because the Hare Krishna mantra doesn't have these rules. But these other mantras, then they have rules of when they're chanting. Does that make sense? So here it means that he would generally do it that three times a day, or at least he would do it at one of these times. Yes? No? Doesn't make sense. Right? Because then you're setting examples. So, you know, whichever one works best for you or whichever one works best for everybody else. Like that. Right, and 108 times is because generally they would do japa with these mantras. Our japa is Hare Krishna. And then these other mantras, they have their own japa, but they're not. We don't chant them 108 or 1008. Like in the Vedic system, the brahmanas, they would chant the Brahma Gayatri, you know, generally 1,008 times. That's their japa. But that's all they're chanting. Does that make sense? Yeah. But at least 108. Like this. That would be... Does that make sense? But Hare Krishna, then we have 16 rounds of that, and they can be chanted any time, any place, any circumstance. Though, for us, then certain circumstances are generally a bit better than others. Like that. So then we try to find the best situation and chant like that. So... When the Brahmins seem withdrawn, intent on his prescribed chanting and meditation. In fact, his outward senses were inactive, not because he was controlling them out of duty, but because ecstatic love was swelling up within him. 115. Sometimes he shouted or loudly sobbed. Right? So if that absorption is there, the senses are automatically controlled. But otherwise, if one is not absorbed, one tries to control the senses to try to create an environment that you can concentrate. Right? So that's why these mechanical systems don't work as well. But the chanting the name, that works very well because you're absorbed in Krishna, who's transcendental. Right? So the idea is that I mechanically, on the material platform, control everything to try to do some spiritual meditation. But here is that the name is so... And that meditation generally is not so personal, right? It's focused on, ideally, Lord Vishnu, right? But otherwise it might be a wall or a candle, you know, so like that. But here then that the meditation is on the name, so it's dynamic, and then that absorption, automatically the senses become controlled, so there's no need of a separate endeavor. 115. Sometimes he shouted or loudly sobbed or stumbled and fell to the ground or rolled about on the ground like a madman. Sometimes he fell unconscious and lay still like a corpse, the flood of his mucus, saliva and tears turning the dust on the cow path into mud. Because the Brahmana was practicing such intense chanting of the Lord's name, he would sometimes feel joy so immense that he would lose outward consciousness. Sometimes he would collapse without wetting the ground as described here, and then he would appear to have died. 117. Out of curiosity, we coward boys would often come look at him, but when he saw us in front of him, he would bow down to us with devotion. He apparently had great respect for the boys, despite their having no special respect for him. 118. He would hardly embrace us, yes.
It seemed that in those days, even in the times of Sri Goswami's, the devotees, they would experience ecstatic symptoms, and they would even show them. But at the time of after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, then we become that shallow, which is too much of the Kali Yuga, that we don't really experience them. Myself, maybe.
Everyone's thinking, why does she just speak for herself? What do you mean, we? A few things. This one is that you didn't have a whole lot of people around, so then these things would happen, but you know, somebody might see them, but it was you were understanding no one's there. Because the principle is generally is you don't show these ecstatic symptoms. Right? So the reason you don't see them is because everybody else is controlling them.
Oh, I see. Okay, I'm talking about myself.
Okay. Yeah. So that's one aspect. Then another aspect is because of before you saw that those who were generally very serious about the process would come looking for the spiritual master, they would be practicing. Right? So, because the culture was stronger and the concept of self-realization was more prominent, then you had more people like that. Right? So then they're coming, they would be coming from backgrounds that would generally have greater qualification. And so they'd have greater focus like that, greater determination, and then they would come look for the spiritual master. So then they're very serious individuals, right? So both their determination to understand and their ability to practice. So then you would see. But at the same time, as you're talking about a huge amount of devotees, and so you're only hearing certain histories of certain ones. Does that make sense? So it's not that necessarily the proportion is any different, just that you have greater volume, so therefore then. Right? But at the same time, as we said, is they're coming from a culture where following sadhana, being determined, being able to control the senses was just a normal practice. So now in the more contemporary age, then it's the Sankirtan mission is going out and generally catching those that they were not in any way, shape, or form thinking that, you know, about devotional service. Right? And so then it just takes a little, some time for them to, so they don't have that background of that spiritual foundation, or that, or even if there is some, it's not in the way of controlling senses and all that. You know what I'm saying? Especially like in the Western culture, you have the Abrahamic religion. I mean, it's like, okay, I mean, even though you'd really love to and that, you really want to steal your next door neighbor's donkey, you don't do it. You know, so, you know, there's some serious, okay, you know, some, you know, does that make sense? So it's not like sense control is, how you say, you know, otherwise you don't have phrases like, enjoy, you know, it's the standard. Is that, yeah. So it just takes some time for that practice to happen, but the beauty of it is that even though it's not there inherently, by chanting and hearing in the association of devotees, it comes from that. You know what I'm saying? And so it's just a matter of time. Is that okay? And before, as they had the forest of Vrindavan, so everyone's out there. You know, now everybody has their own little apartment. So what everybody's doing in their own time? You know, how much people are rolling on the ground and, you know, crying in ecstasy. You don't know because they are in another apartment and their door's closed. So now it'll be all night staring at the ceiling. Am I the only one? Were they joking or were they so the means in general, the quality of those who are beginning Krishna consciousness was higher before, just because the culture was there. That's why the Vedic culture is recommended, because even if you are not, like here, he's not a devotee, this Brahmin. But because of the background and all that, they, you know, they're worshipping a deity, chanting mantras, sadhana, determined to do that, because that's just what you do. And so much benefit is there. But the idea that you have a deity, it's kind of like, you know, hey, you know, we're not from Baal, you know, right? You know, so that doesn't make sense. No? That means the Torah mentions, be careful of the people from Baal, because they worship deities, you know, like that. And I think they also did fire sacrifices. So, you know, deity, you know, sadhana, like, okay, get up in the morning, you know, drink your, you know, cup of coffee, you know, get your teeth brushed, and not necessarily, you know, in that order or not, as you please, you know. You know, so there's certain basic sadhanas, you know, like that. You know, determination in personal development, generally that's not something there. You know, it, moving up in the company, yes, but, you know, other things, no. Is that, you know, so controlling the senses is kind of like, you know, are you kidding? You know, so it just takes time. Does that make sense? So for it to be that quick, it's just you're starting from a more general level. But we see that even those there, because of association, and someone like Jagai and Madhai, who definitely were not interested in practicing any of this. I mean, they did have great determination. They decided they're going to break every rule that Manu talks about. You know?
It means so, they knew the rule.
Yeah, no, they knew the rules. Otherwise, how do you break them all? You know, it's like that. You know, it's thousands of rules. You know, so you have to, you know, which one do we miss? You know, like that. Is that yeah. So like that, but don't worry about it. The principle is there, is you can go back to Godhead in one life, so just take that much. So as long as it works by the end, then you're okay. Mm-hmm. So no need to stay awake at night.
Yeah.
Okay. He would heartily embrace us and affectionately cover us with kisses, as if we were his best friends. He was unable to give up our company. Immersed in Krishna prema, this Brahmana was attracted to the village boys because they resembled young Krishna and his cowherd friends. Priya Bandhu has several meanings. Best friends, close relatives, most dear devotees of the Lord, and the Supreme Lord who is dear to his devotees. 119. He was pleased with my services, like giving gifts of milk products. One day, meeting me on the shore of the Jamuna, he embraced me and spoke in this way. Gopakumar gave his new friend presents of milk, yogurt, and other milk products, and would also carry his water pot and follow him around. This kind of voluntary service pleased the great soul, who became disposed to give the boy his mercy. He receives initiation into the Gopal Mantra, 120. My dear child, if you want to fulfill all your desires, please bathe at Keshi Ghat and then accept from me this mercy of the Lord of the universe. Normally we consider the mercy of the Supreme Lord something intangible, but the saintly Brahman called it this mercy, as if it were a tangible object in front of them. He told Gopakumar, just take it from me, as if literally placing it in his hands. 121. Thus, after I bathed, he imparted to me the same mantra you are chanting. Although he was fully satisfied in himself and indifferent to material things, he was the crest jewel of all compassionate souls. Since Gopakumar and his student had been initiated into the same mantra, their relationship should become very friendly. When Gopakumar got his mantra, he should not have thought that this was his guru's way of reciprocating the gifts of buttermilk and yogurt. His guru, being fully self-satisfied, did not need the service. Only out of infinite compassion for the fallen souls did the guru show Gopakumar his mercy. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Why he shouldn't see it this way?
Because then it's like, okay, I've given you this, he gives you that.
Oh, the
karma. Yeah, because then it'll look like karma. Because technically it's that on the transcendental platform there's nothing we can offer. Mm-hmm. That's why it's said that the debt we owe to the spiritual master is can never be repaid, because we may give some service, some this, some that, but the point is he's giving Krishna. So then that is not something you can actually... How do you repay Krishna? Right? Because Krishna being everything, there's nothing you can actually give. So that's why eternally we have relationship with the guru and those Vaishnavas that we're close with. It's not that we just have here. Here we have in the particular... conditioned forms that we're in, and that will govern those relationships. But in the spiritual world, then it's not. We're there and we do our services in our natural position. And so our relationship will be based on those positions, and the central point is devotion to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
It seems that Brahmana gave initiation without Gopakumar asking for it. He just gave it to him.
Seems to have. But at the same time, as we see, as like we mentioned, depending upon the systems that are being followed, in the Bhagavat, the Nam Guru is the Diksha Guru. In the Pancharatric system, the Nam Guru is not.
Right.
Right? So like for us, Nam Guru is not our Diksha Guru. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Maybe, but it's just like we meet the devotees on the street somebody gives us one of those cards with the mantra and says, chant this, and shows us how to chant it, they're our Nam Guru.
Right.
Right? Or we go to a program and somebody's there and shows everyone how to chant and then leads the kirtan, they're our Nam Guru.
Yeah.
But for us, that's just, we don't even think of it that way. We don't even use the term generally. But technically, they're the one who got us to chant.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But that's an aspect of siksha. just like the Vardhama Pradarsha, whoever gets us inspired to take up the path. So it may be that the non-guru, the Vardhama Pradarsha guru, the Siksha Dik, are all one person, but they may be all different persons, like we see with the Brahmana, it's four different people.
Yeah.
Like that. So the point is that all these aspects are there. So in the Bhagavad, because you're dealing on that transcendental position, it doesn't have the ritual aspects. So simply him going and taking a bath, one, they'll be purified, the mind will be peaceful, he'll know something serious is happening. But technically, it doesn't even require the bath. So, like Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Rupa and Sanatan, you don't really hear much a bath was important. But it was just instructions. So that's their initiation. But for us, we follow the Pancharatrik system, where we'll have a formal initiation and all that. Because he's already rendering service and doing everything, and you know, he's already a resident of Vrindavan. You know, he's born there. So they're kind of in a different category. No? Yes?
It's just interesting because he says here that if you want to fulfill all your desires, he doesn't mention any particular desire, no Krishna Prema, no nothing like that.
Because all desires can only be fulfilled with Krishna Prema. But you want to deal with the other ones on the way, then, you know, this will also do that. Because we'll see the guru come later and give further instructions.
Yeah.
So they're going deeper and deeper. But at least now the connection's made, because he has that sincere service attitude. But he's voluntarily doing this service. It wasn't that he asked him or someone told him to do that. So then there's some qualification there. Does this work?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but for us, we kind of need a bit more formality.
Yeah.
You know, because then we know something happened. But here is, you know, he's talking about something more serious. You know, just like here, that tantric brahmana, he's been revealed as a Mathura brahmana. So then he is only because of his background and culture then chanting this mantra despite what may happen and what others may say. Does that make sense? He's come across very high grade karmakandis or gyanis. They're very qualified, very knowledgeable and all that, but they're saying different things. But, you know, he listens, they sound interesting, they may even seem like a plausible goal, but he never gives up his chanting because that's already been given to him. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of culture you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's not that something will be given up, you know, because it's you know, one has been given this, so the one's obligated to follow. So then it works. Does that make sense? So the character that you're dealing with is also very great. Point is when we come to that platform, then we get the same kind of benefit. Yes? Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's why in the Pancharatrik system, one may not be as qualified, but by that initiation, it changes the body, so then you're starting on that platform. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then it's an advantage. So it basically appears in, you know, other ages the Pancharatrik wasn't as prominent. Dwapara Yuga is used. But in other ages it's not. So it doesn't have to be. But now it's you know, a standard system. So we use all three. We use the Bhagavat, Pancharatrik, and the Vedic. We use all three. You know, so at least one of them is going to get you.
Yeah. Maharaj, can we say that Bhagavad is prominent and in support of Bhagavad we use Pancharatrik and
Vedic? Yes. No, that's it. For us, the Bhagavad is prominent, but these other two give support. Hmm. You know, it's just like Prabhupada, it's just, you know, everyone would chant all day and do Hari Nam, and that's all they were going to do. You know, chant 64 rounds and like that, but then that didn't quite make it, so then they have to introduce other things and the regulation and all that. It's like before 1970, they didn't have Mangalartik and regular programs.
Yeah.
like that. They just basically would get up in the morning, chant, have prasad, you know, have some discussions like that, and then go out on Harinam for 10, 12 hours a day, and then come back in the evening. And so, you know, if they had a program that, you know, there was a big thing happening at night, they'd do Harinam at night. You know? So it wasn't a worry that they had to get up for Mangal Arati. It's just what worked for Harinam. But then when Prabhupada saw his devotees weren't regularly learning philosophy, weren't getting, didn't know things and this and that, then in 70 he started the program that we follow now. Right, so this means all the aspects were all there, because he expected devotees would read, you know, the books are there, so read, chant, discuss that with the other devotees, you know, and then go out on take prasad, go out on sankirtan, you know, preach to others and all that. So some were doing, some weren't. So it was kind of like in 70 when all this, when some Mayavad philosophy came up, Satsarup was the only one that could discuss with them, because he was the only one that had read anything. Everybody else is just, you know, take prasad and Hari Bal, you know. It's like, you know, we're good to go. You know? So the Prabhupada worked in these kind of things. And though he had the idea that by, I think it was by 75, that devotees would be on the platform of Bhaktivedantas and would be initiating gurus and things like this. So that means he expected that these systems of study would be in place, but devotees didn't seem to catch them so much. You know. Hippies aren't known to be great scholars. You know. Right. Satsarup had a job, you know, so that's why he read. You know. Sad, but true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was about to explain the method of worshipping with the mantra, but as soon as he mentioned the object of meditation, he was overcome by pure love of God, became confused, and started crying like a woman separated from her lover. Gopakumar's guru had the instructions for properly using the mantra just on the tip of his tongue. He was about to tell Gopakumar how to touch the body with the syllables of the mantra, how to meditate systematically on the meaning of the mantra, and other details for reciting the mantra in worship. But as soon as he started to describe the beautiful form of Sriman Madan Gopal, a sudden ecstasy caught hold of him, and crying like a lovesick woman, remembering her distant beloved, he lost his train of thought. 123. When he regained normal consciousness, I was afraid to ask him anything. He stood up and went away, distressed, and after that he was nowhere to be found. Right? So it's similar, though, even though, how you say, the Mathura Brahman, he knew how to chant the mantra and stuff, but he didn't know what it meant or anything. Well, here is more of an understanding. He knows it's connected with the Lord in that, but he doesn't know the technical point. So either way, we see it works. You don't know the technicalities of it. You don't even understand how it works. Both of them, the mantra still has an effect. Mm-hmm. Having just received initiation, Gopakumar felt deep reverence for his spiritual master, and without first being spoken to, he dared not say anything. He feared he might have done something offensive to upset his guru, and thought that if he said anything wrong, his guru might start crying again. Why didn't the saintly brahmana give the missing instructions unasked? In his ecstatic mood, he was unhappy and distracted, so he went away saying nothing more. Because he had no fixed residence, he was not to be found again. 124. I had no idea what this mantra was that I had received, what fruit its chanting would bear, or even how the mantra was to be practiced. Gopakumar did not even know the name of this 10-syllable mantra. Was the mantra meant to be sung out loud or chanted quietly? Or was it a mantra at all? If it was powerful, when chanted perfectly, what fruit would it bear? His guru had told him that the mantra would fulfill all his desires, but that was vague. Until now, Gopakumar had never thought seriously about his ultimate desires and goals. 125. Simply out of respect for the Brahmana's words, I constantly murmured this mantra in secluded places, unseen by others. I chanted it just out of curiosity. Okay, so again, here is that respect for who gave him the mantra. By the influence of that great person, even such aimless chanting purified my mind, and I developed faith in the mantra. Without scientific knowledge of its practice and significance, the young sadhaka Gopa Kumar could hardly have solid faith in the mantra. He was not firmly convinced of its efficacy, nor was he affectionately attracted to it. Nonetheless, his naive chanting purified his mind of lust, envy, and greed. 120.
It was offensive? Oh, offenseless, sorry. Because it was offenseless chanting, even though he didn't know?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically you could say, but I mean, even if it's offensive, you still get purified.
And it'll be slower.
It'll be slower, yes. Because that's the thing, is that the name is Krishna, so it will have effect. Is that, so that's the thing. It will always have effect.
But can we call it Gyanta Sukriti, what he did?
No, because he's initiated, he's been told to chant. But he doesn't know, you know, the details of it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, that's why the holy name is good, because you don't require any of these things. Because the other things is you have to chant, do achmans and all those things. With nyasas and that, you deal with the mantras and all those kind of things. Just like Gayatri. It's a 5-10 minute thing, the invocation of it. We just sit down and chant the mantra, and that itself is, you know, ritualistic beyond ritualism. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, that's the, anything more than that, you know, the camel's back would break, you know. But sitting down, doing achman, you know, having clean clothes, sitting in the proper place, being at the proper time, you know, chanting, doing achman, sprinkling yourself with the mantras, with water, chanting the mantras for that, then invoking the mantra, you know, or doing all these different things in that worship, then chanting the gun, then sending the mantra and doing all those things. It would take you about 10 minutes. You know.
And it still works without it for Gopa Kumar.
Okay. Yes, because you're dealing with Krishna's names there. You know, if this was a demigod mantra, that it wouldn't work. But because it's a holy name, it still works.
That's why Gayatri works for us, even though we don't do it.
Yes, because we're chanting Hare Krishna. If we weren't chanting Hare Krishna, they would have no, basically, you know, except for the names of the Lord that are in there, then that's about it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Contemplating my guru's words, I understood the mantra to be the means of achieving the Lord of the universe. Thus, I became satisfied and absorbed in chanting. So even though he didn't know, by chanting it, you'll get purified and Krishna himself will reveal. You know, just like with the Mathura Brahmana. Then so many things became, he understood as he went, but he still didn't know the full aspect. Gopa Kumar's guru had told him, accept the Supreme Lord's mercy. Remembering this, Gopa Kumar concluded that the mantra was meant for obtaining the favor of the Supreme Lord. This was a satisfying reason to take enthusiastically to the chanting. 128. I became eager to know who this Lord of the universe was and when I might be able to see him. With this as my only aspiration, I abandoned my home and other attachments and went to the bank of the Ganga. Wanting to identify the Lord of the universe, Gopa Kumar compared himself to familiar people and things. But he could find no clue in the place where he had been brought up, so he left home to wander in search of the Lord. He meets a worshiper of the Shaligram Shila, 129 to 140. Hearing the distant sound of a conch shell being blown, I followed that sound to its origin on a sandy bank of the river. There I saw a learned Brahmana worshipping a Shaligram Shila, and I bowed down. I asked him, Master, what are you doing? What are you worshipping? Laughing, he replied, Dear boy, don't you know that this is the Lord of the universe? The worshipper was surprised that anyone, even a child, wouldn't know that Sri Shaligram is a direct incarnation of the Lord of the universe. 131. Hearing this, I felt unlimited happiness. Like a poor man finding a welcome treasure, or a family man reuniting with a long-lost relative. I gazed for a long time at the Lord of the universe, and with faith bowed down to him, my whole body flat on the ground like a rod. By the Brahmana's mercy, I received some water that had washed the Lord's feet, and some remnants of offerings to him. With newborn faith and affection for the Lord in his Shalagram form, Gopakumar happily accepted the Lord's Charinamrita, along with remnants of tulsi leaves and other items earlier offered to the Lord. 133. Then the Brahmana, preparing to return home, lay the Lord of the universe to rest in a box. Pained to see this, I tearfully complained in this way. My God, you are putting the Supreme Lord into a box. What an unfit place. And he hasn't even eaten. How will he sleep if he is hungry? His Prabhupada mentioned Shaligram Puja means, how you say, puja sleeping. You know, take him out of the box, do the puja, then put him back in the box. You know, just, Gopakumar thought the little box an ill-chosen place for the Lord of the universe. Told that being placed in such a box is what is done with the deity after worshipping to him is finished. Gopakumar replied that he had not seen the Brahmana make an offering of food substantial enough to satisfy the Lord's appetite, and that the Lord should not be forced to sleep without first being fed, right? Because he just do some little offering like that. 135. O excellent Brahman from Mathura, because of my material conditioning, I was unaware of the Lord of the universe, that the Lord of the universe is different from everyone and everything in this world. Gopakumar was ignorant of the Supreme Person's transcendental nature. The Lord can enjoy himself everywhere simultaneously by expanding into an infinite number of forms. There is no reason to worry that he will go hungry because of one devotee's neglect. He may seem to be a small stone trapped in a box, but in fact the Lord is unlimited. 136. As I complained and suffered in my uncontrived lamentation, the Brahman tried to console me. Full of humility, he shyly spoke. The saintly Brahman was ashamed of being too poor to feed even a human guest, what to speak of the Supreme Lord. And in fact, the place where he had now performed his worship simply had no facilities for cooking. But the humility the Brahmana felt was not caused by any external circumstance. It was a natural ecstasy of his individual type of love of God. 132.7. O new Vaishnava, he said, what more can this poor man do? I can offer to the Lord of the universe only the meals I prepare for myself. The Brahmana who lived near the Ganga thought, this cowherd boy has never seen a Brahmana like me worshipping Shaligram Shila. He must be new to spiritual life. 138. If you are eager to see the Lord's opulence and a great festival of his worship, please go to the capital city of this country's very saintly ruler. He is attached to the worship of Lord Vishnu with great love. You will find his city not far away, and there you can behold the Lord of the universe, who is so difficult to see. The king of this district on the shore of the Ganga was a sincere Vaishnava, which made him a greater saint than any karmi, jnani, or ordinary yogi. He worshipped the deity of Lord Vishnu with festive opulence. If Gopakumar liked, he could go to the capital and see for himself this king's wonderful worship. He could see the Lord's beauty, the rich offerings made to the Lord, and his luxurious sleeping quarters. The opulence of the king's deity was much more readily visible than those of the poor Brahmana's Shaligram Shila. Because it's all about that devotion that's there and the facilities you have. So since he was worried about the facilities weren't sufficient, so the Brahmana suggested he go to the city and then see how the king is worshipping. Because there, then the deity will have so much facility and so much opulence and great. So then he would be satisfied seeing this. Because he's taking it, since he doesn't know what a Brahman worshipping a Shaligram is, that means he must be new at devotional service. So then this greater opulence will be more recognizable as something connected to the Lord. Yeah. 140. You will feel great ecstasy fulfilling all your heart's desires. But for now, please come have lunch in my house from the remnants of what has been offered to Lord Vishnu. Gopakumara will certainly feel bliss if he witnesses the opulence of the Vishnu deity in the royal city, hears the songs and prayers recited for the pleasure of the Lord, and tastes the remnants of food offered to the Lord. The Brahmin admits that devotees who have pure love for the Lord prefer to see him worship with suitable opulence, opulence that he, a poor man, cannot provide for his own deity. Gopakumara should therefore at once go to the capital, but before he goes, he should have lunch at the Brahmin's house, where he can taste what little rice and other items have been offered this morning to the Brahmana Shaligram deity. But, because the idea is that if you can worship the Lord nicely, that's always preferred to something simple. Simple is only because that's all that there is. Right? But if there's more facility, you would always use more facility. You know, just like if you can get better ingredients, you do that. If you don't have, you use whatever you have. So the principle is that you just do what is best in the situation. Right? He visits the capital to see the Lord worshipped, 141-151. Delighted by the Brahmana's words, I offered him my obeisances, and without stopping at his house, even though hungry, I set off for the capital by the road he pointed out. Gopakumara repeatedly prostrated himself before the Brahmana with great devotion. He did this partly to beg pardon for declining the Brahmin's invitation, and partly to beg blessings for an auspicious journey. Right, because he was so enthusiastic to go, he just wanted to. 142. Within the inner precincts of the city, from a distance I heard the sound of temple worship of the Lord of the universe. I had never heard such a tumult, so I asked about it from people nearby. The noise Gopakumara heard came from the Lord's Artik ceremony in the royal temple, where many devotees were chanting and playing musical instruments. The sound impressed Gopakumara as very wonderful. 143. Learning that the Lord of the universe was being worshipped, I wanted to see him. As I approached, no one stopped me, so I quickly entered the temple, where in front of me I beheld the beautiful forearm form of the Lord, his hands resplendent with conch shell, disc, lotus, and club. The guards at the door of the temple neither questioned Gopakumara nor blocked his entrance, so he eagerly ran inside. There he saw the deity of Vishnu, whose beauty and opulence more than fulfilled the Brahmana's predictions and Gopakumara's own expectations. The four arms of the Lord resembled the bodies of mighty serpents. 144. All the parts of his body were exquisitely attractive, and his complexion resembled a new rain cloud. Words can hardly describe his youthful body. Dressed in yellow silk, ornamented with gold and garlanded with forest flowers that increased his beauty, his face, with its sweet nectarian smile and lotus-like eyes, appeared like the full moon. Beginning from his eyes and mouth, every part of the Lord's body was enchanting. Gopakumara could only compare his beauty to that of the most beautiful things he knew, a rain cloud, the moon, and lotus flowers. 145. While many attendants, fondly attached to serving him, worshipped him with various rare items, he stood on an excellent throne and from a distance watched the dancing and other entertainment presented before him. Every sort of wonderful paraphernalia was being engaged for his pleasure. As the most precious items to be found were presented to the Lord, one after another, his personal attendants waved chamara fans intently and offered him betel nut and other refreshments. In the midst of all this, instead of coming forward to meet the crowd, he stood on his throne and acknowledged the entertainment going on further away by watching with unblinking eyes. 146. Filled with supreme bliss, I repeatedly fell flat on the ground. Today, I thought, I have seen what I always wanted to see. Now my life is a success. I shall never go away from this place. And so, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, I began to live there happily. Gopakumara had left his family and friends to wander in search of his worshipable Lord, and had now found him. Although, as a penniless beggar from a foreign country, Gopakumara could hardly expect to be allowed to stay in the neighborhood of the royal palace and dine on the remnants of the king's deity. The local Vaishnavas were kind to him. They brought him Mahaprasad and did everything possible to encourage and protect him. This one right here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Swami Vaitava Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Jai Gaur Prabhupada ki.